Thank you. Thanks so much. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. So thank you to the Maternal Health Initiative. Thank you all for making the time to be here this morning. I think what I'm going to do is provide a little bit of context to reproductive health in humanitarian settings. So just very briefly touch on a little bit of history. And then I'm going to pull some of the findings that came out of the IWAG, Interagency Working Group on Reproductive Health and Crisis. We call it IWAG, but it should probably be pronounced IAG or something, but IWAG's easier. I'm going to pull some of those findings that were particularly apparent in the funding studies and in the in-depth field assessment of the global evaluation. So therefore talk about some progress that's been made and some gaps that remain, particularly in the issue of maternal newborn health. Okay, so the IWAG, so first of all, the refugee and internally displaced persons, including adolescents, rights to reproductive health were first recognized in 1994 in the International Conference on Population and Development. This was really critical because in 1995, UNHCR, UNFPA, WHO all went, we really have to do something about providing reproductive health amid all the other demands in these at the onset of these humanitarian emergencies, and they did. The U.S. State Department funded a full-time position actually at UNHCR to initiate the IWAG, which involves some 40 different agencies, and one of the first tasks of that IWAG was to establish guidelines for the field. And I think they were among the first guidelines of any type in the humanitarian field, so yay. Few good men, but mostly women who led that effort at UNHCR and UNFPA. And in those guidelines, they established a set of priority interventions to be put in place at the same time humanitarian actors are trying to meet basic and survival needs and prevent infectious diseases. There were to be these coordinated activities to prevent excess maternal and newborn mortality, to prevent the transmission of HIV, and to address sexual violence, so to work to prevent it and also to provide care to survivors of sexual violence. It became known as a minimum initial service package. UNFPA established a number of kits of supplies that support those priority interventions. So I just wanted to explain that historically, the IWAG has put forth these guidelines. So the first ones I used myself in the field when they were being piloted in 1996, but they were official in 1999. They were updated again in 2010. And just to say, they're currently under revision right now with a new version coming out in the spring of early spring of 2017. So the IWAG, you know, develops these guidelines, develops tools and resources to support the implementation of reproductive health in humanitarian settings and undertakes these periodic evaluations as well. So I'd like to highlight kind of the state of the field just a little bit. So the IWAG today is housed at the Women's Refugee Commission as a dedicated coordinator and an 18-member steering committee with all the relevant UN agencies and international NGOs, humanitarian and development organizations, working together to push this issue forward. So it's really critical, we felt, and the reasons why the Women's Refugee Commission has tried to support it is to have coordinated and collaborative efforts, and that's been really helpful in moving the agenda forward and making the progress that we have over the last two decades. So in terms of the IWAG's global evaluation from 2012 to 2014, it builds on the one that was taken a decade earlier, 2002 to 2004, in that it involves a synopsis. It's actually a snapshot of what reproductive health looks like in a given point in time. So it's like a kaleidoscope of multiple different studies that we brought together, both in the 2002 to 2004 and in this study, to try to get a picture of the field at a certain point in time. So it involved a literature review, an assessment of agency commitment capacity to provide reproductive health in humanitarian settings, which in this case involved 82 different agencies from both development and humanitarian fields. It also included in-depth assessments in the field on the availability, use, and quality of reproductive health services in three countries, South Sudan, Democratic Republic of Congo, and Burkina Faso. It also did an assessment of this MISP. Is this MISP being applied at the onset of a humanitarian emergency within the Syrian refugee crisis in Jordan? So the assessment involved a camp setting in an urban context in Jordan. And then it involves an analysis of crisis funding trends for reproductive health. And there were two studies in that, and I am going to pull those out and discuss them a bit. One of the studies looks at the OCHA's financial tracking system, and the other study looks at official development assistance. So I want to talk about those and how they relate to the different components of reproductive health in particular. And then Paul has already mentioned that UNHCR's health information system was part of this evaluation as well. For years, UNHCR's had this health information system and has collected critical data on reproductive health, which is great and really informed the study. So the capacity to address reproductive health in crisis has increased since the last global evaluation of 2004. Development agencies have jumped in to participate in humanitarian relief, and that's helped quite a bit. But almost all the respondents reported increased human resource capacity to program reproductive health in humanitarian settings in all the technical areas of reproductive health, except for perhaps cervical cancer screening and treatment and safe abortion care. So just very briefly over these slides on the capacity study. More than two-thirds of agencies reported having an internal policy or mandate to program reproductive health in humanitarian emergencies. So 68% of the 82 agencies reported that they have that mandate and policy. 49% of the agencies reported that they have had increased funding from 2004 to 2012 to address reproductive health in humanitarian settings. So quite a bit of reporting of increased capacity to address services. The MISP study showed there's increased commitment to the MISP in humanitarian emergencies. What does that mean? Well, there's a lead agency generally for reproductive health in these crises within the health cluster to lead coordination, to fundraise, to get the supplies in place, and for everybody to work towards getting that MISP in place so that provide the humanitarian actors can move on to providing comprehensive reproductive health as soon as possible. So a lot of major improvements. Now onto the funding studies. I want to talk a little bit about the overseas development assistance study that was done in 18 conflict-affected settings. Funding for reproductive health increased 298% over the 2002 to 2011 period. So that's quite a bit, especially if you look at overall ODA, official development assistance, increasing 178%. But a large part of that funding actually went to HIV programming. Probably 56% of it went to HIV programming. Not that that's bad, but I just want to point out as we go along here where some of the gaps are. In addition, the study looked at comparing conflict-affected least developed countries to non-conflict-affected least developed countries. And interestingly, it showed that conflict-affected least developed countries received 57% less ODA assistance than non-conflict-affected countries, even though most reproductive health indicators in those conflict-affected countries are worse. So, some of the reasons for that might be, you know, just security issues, governance, capacity to absorb that kind of money in country, or it might be attention to policy or media coverage as well. So worth noting the overall funding picture. And then the other funding study I want to talk about is the OCHA financial tracking system. This study involved the review of 11,300 some different health and protection proposals and what was funded in them over a 12-year period. You'll see more data was in this next study was available in the latter part of this. More data was available from the financial tracking system in the latter years of the study, so we could glean more information. But if you look at the components of reproductive health funded, good news, you see a lot in maternal newborn health there. It had the most funding of all. But a closer look at those proposals shows that the funding went largely to what we kind of call lower hanging fruit, easier to implement services like antenatal care and postnatal care and nutrition programs to support them, versus a life-saving emergency obstetric and newborn care that's so critical and probably more costly as well. We see progress there in GBB funding over those years, rightfully, because that 10 years ago was one of the biggest gaps in reproductive health programming was GBB. And also, I think substantive attention to HIV, which I give all credit to Paul Spiegel for moving forward in the humanitarian field. So those two areas were the weakest in the 2002 to 2004 area. They've grown quite a bit in terms of attention and effective programming in the field. But take a look at family planning. It's so little, and we know how family planning contributes to positive health outcomes, prevents maternal mortality, and HIV. So this is one of the themes that kind of came across, very low attention to family planning, and safe abortion wasn't anywhere in those 11,300 proposals over 11 years. There was some attention. There were 13 proposals, I understand, that contained post-abortion care, so if someone had a miscarriage or an unsafe abortion, they would be able to access post-abortion care. So those two areas, major gaps in terms of what agencies are proposing to do and what they're actually funded to do. And then you take the funding studies and you look at the in-depth assessments in the three countries of DRC, South Sudan, and Burkina Faso. And out of 63 health facilities, only one hospital and one health facility were adequately staffed and equipped to provide comprehensive emergency obstetric care. These more challenging clinical areas are the most in need in the field in terms of attention and support. Then clinical care for survivors of sexual assault was also a gap in actually the MISP assessment, but in the three in-depth studies. And it's consistently a gap, I'd say, in almost every humanitarian emergency I go to. I think one of the reasons is that the ministries of health do not have an existing protocol for care for survivors of sexual violence. It's not a difficult intervention, but you have to have the protocol, and then you need nurses, doctors, midwives, and people trained in it. So whenever NGOs go to the field and they aim to set up these programs, they have a whole group of staff who don't know how to provide these services, and they don't necessarily have a national protocol either. So it's a huge gap in the field. And then where it is set up, where these missed services are set up, there's not enough effort to inform the communities about the benefits of seeking care. Because if a woman's been raped, she's obviously going to be in shock anyway. She's going to need a family member, a friend, a neighbor, someone to say, you know, you need to get health care to try to prevent pregnancy and the transmission of HIV. And that has to be weighed against the fear of, you know, the stigma associated with reporting or the fear of retribution from the perpetrator. But the people don't really have the opportunity to weigh those two things and make a decision about their best interest because they're not aware of the benefits of seeking care or where the services actually are. So a lot of community information, education and communication needs to be done to improve that. So just to say again, big gaps in the in-depth studies in the field in terms of family planning, emergency obstetric care. I mean, emergency contraception is a gap, but also long-acting and permanent methods of family planning. And so despite all the established guidelines and all the efforts we're making to get comprehensive reproductive health in the field, it's still a really critical gap in protracted crisis as well. And then finally, I have put out on the table the compendium of these seven studies. And if you weren't able to grab a hard copy, they are online at the IWOG website, the whole compendium is, and also some summary with more recommendations than I could go into here. But clearly humanitarian contexts are often characterized by short-term funding. There aren't long-term funding initiatives to make sure programs are fluid and cohesive and innovative. More needs to be done, I think, at the national level in terms of disaster risk reduction and preparedness for these emergencies. And then in terms of the communities we reach out to, we need to expand a little bit more now and start thinking of people who are living with disabilities, LGBTI populations, and adolescents most certainly, and very young adolescents, more attention to populations who have historically been marginalized. So that's it.